Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's had a good start to your day, and hopefully for most of you, the end of your week. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick hanging out in East Nashville, where we've been the past month plus on this show. Chase McCabe holding fort in the west side of town in Bellevue, and Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Round one of the virtual NFL draft is in the books. Rounds two and three tonight. Remember, all the coverage you heard last night, tonight, and Saturday until the draft's completion, which will be through seven rounds, can be heard right here on 102.5 The Game and 94.9. Guys, how you doing?
All right. East side, looking good.
East side, looking good. All right. I like it.
West side, feeling good.
Feeling good. Looking good and feeling good.
Looking
all right.
Looking good and feeling good.
So, round one is in the books. What did everybody think of? Let's start with just the overall product. Not, you know, that's what we talked about so much. What would it look like? Well, we've now seen what a virtual draft will look like, and I suspect there's going to be more to come after this one. I suspect we'll talk about it today. Is this what the NHL's draft is going to look like? Is this what the NBA's draft is going to look like? Is this what Major League Baseball's draft is going to look like? As a whole, what did you think of the first round, 32 picks?
I thought it was pretty well done, to be honest. I thought it could have been a whole lot more full of communication breakdowns, but I thought it went almost flawless. Within reason, right? There was a couple times where the guy wasn't there or whatever, but for the most part, they went from place to place, person to person. I watched coverage on both ESPN and ABC, which was distinctly different, I thought.
And there you go. See, Willie gets all the technical difficulties.
The personality of the commissioner is one thing, but I thought it was good.
I think maybe it's like his kids, maybe like Vrabel's kids. Maybe there's a lot of craziness going on in the Donick household we just can't see right now. I mean, I don't know if Mahoney's wearing a throwback Willie jersey. I don't know. Maybe even a Winter Park throwback jersey. Who knows? I'm not sure what Evie is doing. You know, we don't know. Maybe it looks like the Vrabel household. We're not sure what Aaron's doing. But clearly there's been here, especially this week, there's been some things going on in the Donick household. I know Willie's still with us, but Willie, you were doing a lot of burping.
Yeah,
a lot of in and out.
Maybe, you know, he had some carbonation with breakfast and he's just burping. But I thought it was well done. You know, Goodell was cheesy. I appreciate the touch, A for effort of trying to, you know, have the fans behind him and boo him and that, but it just came off very cheesy. So I hope there's less of that tonight. But look, again, you got to do something. You know, he's in his basement.
Yeah, but it's just so uncomfortable.
It was cringy.
It's so, you could just tell, so out of sorts for him to be anything but a robot.
Yeah, and
I think that's what has hurt him over the years. Well, besides some of his decision making or lack of, but just the robotic feel to him. It's just so robotic, and just there's no human element to Roger Goodell, and I think that was probably the toughest thing for me, is he just doesn't come off normal at all. He just comes off like a robot.
No, and look, some people are just like that, and when they try to be different, it's very awkward. And I think that was the case last night with him. So I just stick to what you know, Rog, and be you, and that'll be fine. But from the technical side, I thought it was fine. You know, there were a couple of hiccups with ESPN talking over each other. I think Lewis Riddick was on a delay and, you know, things that they kind of had to work through. But Trey Wingo did a fantastic job playing point guard. You mentioned ABC. I thought that was done, and they were all together. But, you know, ESPN using some of the NFL network analysts, I thought that was cool. Daniel Jeremiah, Kurt Warner, Michael Irvin was in there, and I think like they almost had too many analysts at times on ESPN.
Really?
But, yeah.
Huh, I don't ever get that feel that there's too many analysts.
Yeah, I could have done without Michael Irvin and Booger McFarland, but that's just me. You know, and that's coming from a Cowboys fan there, Darren. You know, talking about my receiver, but I think that they just didn't really add much, and Michael Irvin was cringeworthy at times. But overall, I thought it was well done. It moved smoothly, and it seemed like it went by pretty fast.
I've got to be honest. I don't know. I don't really ever time it because we're usually, you know, especially the last 5 years, we've been busy. You know, this time of year, like the NFL draft was not the only thing on our plate like it was this year. I can't. It's been a while since it's been the only thing on our plate.
Yeah.
So I don't really time it. I don't know. But you're right. I will admit that I felt the same way throughout the night. Like, is it me or is this thing going faster than normal?
It felt that way.
But I don't know. I don't know the times. I would love somebody to tweet out the times the last 10 years of the NFL first-round draft and see where this one stacked up.
Yeah, I think that would be good,
You know,
too.
We've talked about this a lot, guys. Am I sounding any better?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Loud and clear.
Okay, well, we've talked about this in terms of baseball games sometimes. The time of the game is one thing, but it's the flow of the game. I don't know what the time was, but I did think it flowed pretty well. I didn't find myself sitting there going, man, when is this ever going to be over? When are the Titans going to pick? How long am I going to have to wait? I feel like I've had that sense before, that it's just dragging, that it's way too long between picks. I did think they kept it moving pretty well. And one point you guys were making about Goodell, in fairness to him, and he is certainly not Mr. Personality, but if you watch any of the late night shows or any show that usually is done in front of an audience, and this I can relate to as an announcer who's, you know, contemplating what it's like to call a game with no fans. When you have nobody in front of you, like even Jimmy Fallon, it's harder. It's so different for him and for Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert to do their shows. They're trying, but when all you have is a screen behind you and there's nobody around you, even the best jokes are hard to pull off. Sometimes, but they tried. They didn't try to put him on, you know, give him too much. They tried to give him just enough, and that was probably one of the weaker parts of it. But I don't know what you can do other than just have him read off the card, and that's all.
I think he feeds off the energy of the fans, whether they're booing him or not. I just think that's a part of it with him, and he's so used to that, and that. That's a part of the experience that you miss. And, you know, the hugs, like the awkward bro hug that he does with the players. And so that's why I think we're so focused on his fumbles and stumbles last night, because you didn't have that, you know, as a part of the experience with him. Because I think it's hilarious to make fun of him with the bro hug. Like, that's the biggest thing I missed last night is, I can't do the awkward bro hug with the players as they walk across the stage.
Yeah, I've been watching the late night shows. I have checked them out from time to time, and them doing their so-called stand-up act in front of no one right at their house. And you're right. It is. It's definitely different. But it's not like Roger Goodell needs the laugh or applause light to come on, you know, because he's not getting that anyway, even with the crowd. Nobody's laughing or nobody's applauding. They're only booing. But I don't know. I know it's not easy. I thought he fumbled around a lot last night, but you know, it's not like it didn't change how I felt about the draft. It's just us talking about it. I mean, you know, awarding Las Vegas the draft again in this year was funny. It was a big gaffe, but you know, mistakes happen. I get it, and it's you know, because he's the commissioner. You know, it's magnified. I get that. But, you know, he also makes $40-plus million a year, so deal with it. You know what? If you get criticized, deal with it.
I also thought they didn't – it was interesting. Because they were in the position they were, I thought it did open up some things that maybe I hadn't seen as much of before. I kind of liked watching, you know, all of the people in their homes. We were all curious, like Jerry Jones on the yacht or whatever, and other people. You know, obviously Mike Vrabel's home was quite interesting.
Oh, you mean Henry Ruggs in the robe?
That was fantastic.
Henry Ruggs in the robe.
Bruce
Arians. Yeah, all of that element to it.
Bruce Arians on his porch.
They also, on the porch, yeah, that was those were all, you know, really good personal touches. They didn't overanalyze. You know, you didn't have all of this film broken down. It was more basic, which I thought was good. ABC took more of the human interest side with the Tom Rinaldi kind of angle to it. You know, they tried to do some personal stuff, which I thought was pretty good. I thought all in all, there were some things about this production that I enjoyed more than the regular production.
Well, if we were just still talking about the same boring, old, stale draft that used to be in New York City, I think we would be on to something, right? I think sure. We would be having a serious conversation of, okay, the NFL. But we're not. Like, the NFL's already discovered, you know, which I was saying for years and years and years, like, get out of your freaking bubble and move this thing around. And now they've done it, and they've discovered that it's, you know, it has changed everything in how we feel about the draft, and we can talk about this firsthand because we went through it as a market last year. And I feel bad that Las Vegas wasn't able to do that. I'm sure who's it next year? It's Cleveland, is that
yeah.
right?
And that's sure what was first, so funny is because everybody right, forgot about that.
Right. Whenever he announced that, I'm sure Cleveland was like, wait a minute, what? Because your initial reaction is to say, oh, he goofed. He said 2020. He meant to say 2021. And I'm sure folks in Cleveland are like, did we just get bumped from our draft? So it's actually going to jump over Cleveland and be 2022. But, you know, they have figured out this draft thing works. I don't know yeah. why it took so long, but nonetheless, they finally got there. They eventually landed the plane, and they've realized that going to, you know, NFL cities – and letting them put on a production and having hundreds of thousands of fans show up is pretty darn cool. So you're right. If we were just talking about the old stale draft that they had forever that was old and stale and boring, then, yeah, I think we would be having a different conversation today about this virtual draft. But because we've seen now what the new draft looks like, and it's still new, and it's still fresh, and it's still shiny, and it still has that new car smell to it, new draft smell to it, then, you know, they're not going to be making very many changes. Now, what it may do, Willie, to your point, maybe it will have – I don't know if these guys feel robbed that they didn't get to dress up in their spiffy suit and go up on stage and give an awkward hug to the commissioner and be on television that-a-way at the site, or if maybe they enjoyed it more. Maybe this will have some of these guys going, I would just rather be at home with family and friends and my agent. You know, yeah, I don't know.
That's a good point.
I'm really curious to hear what Richard Deitch has to say at 10:35 about the coverage with all the challenges. He had a great article leading up to the draft on all of the logistics that went into pulling this off on the three different networks. Even the NFL Network had to partner with ABC and ESPN. And as you notice, they shared personalities.
Yep.
There were a lot of crossovers right on the different networks. But I thought, all in all, I bet you they came out with a few things that they thought, you know, maybe not with going forward, no matter what the crowd situation is.
Yeah, I think there will be some changes. I think there are definitely some takeaways. And, Darren, you bring up a very good point, because I could totally see some of the big names going, you know what, I'm just going to do my own thing at my house with my family and in my circle. Now, there's, you know, like coming to Nashville or going to Vegas, but – and. You know, no shot at Cleveland, but
here goes.
But, you know, I mean, you know where I'm going.
No like, shot to Cleveland, but here goes.
Right. I mean, like, but like, are you all that excited to go to Cleveland as you would have been to go to Vegas if you're a draft prospect? I mean, I think there's something.
I think we know the answer.
So that could that, you know, you have it this year and the next year you could have more players being like, nah, I'm just going to chill. Chill at my
especially
house.
Especially if it was cold. I mean, it could absolutely be snowing next year in Cleveland yeah. during the draft. It could be.
Yeah, and that's why Cleveland was a little bit of a head-scratcher for me to hold an event like the draft. I know you got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all of that, but I was like, the weather could suck, so which I guess could have been the case here. But, you know, it's just I think they've learned some stuff. I loved the, you know, showing the coaches and the GMs at their houses. And you know,
We're going to talk about that on the other side. Was that a great idea for the Titans? I don't know. It's created a buzz.
Mike Vrabel did talk about that. I watched the Zoom
press conference. We'll talk about it on the other side. We will do that. We will talk about the Vrabel household that quite honestly, I think had more chatter on Twitter than the Titans selecting Isaiah Wilson, the big offensive tackle from Georgia. Quite the chatter that we'll discuss on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, the Titans held firm at 29, and they made a selection, and they took a big tackle from Georgia. He's a big, big man, Isaiah Wilson. And so he will certainly compete for that right tackle spot. A lot of people thought, you know, and by the way, two cornerbacks went right after that. One from Auburn, and Jeff Gladney from TCU. So the Dolphins and Vikings taking two cornerbacks that a lot of people thought that would also be the position that the Titans would target. But instead, they decided to go with the big, gigantic frame of Isaiah Wilson. So we'll get into that in just a moment. Richard Deitch, by the way, will join us in about 15 minutes from The Athletic. But before that pick was even made, a lot of shots of the Vrabel household. And, boy, did it get Twitter buzzing. And you said you listened to Mike Vrabel on the Zoom call afterwards, and he addressed a lot of things?
He did, and I could tell he was a little irritated, but was also, you know, he basically opened it up and he said, listen, I'm in a house with 18 and 19-year-olds that have been cooped up for 6 weeks, and so they're all going a little stir-crazy and wanted to have a little fun. He said Tyler was the one that everybody thought he was sitting on the toilet and that he was actually sitting on a bar stool next to his mom, and he didn't want to be in all the craziness. So he was sitting on a bar stool and was shown in a mirror.
He's a freshman in college, is that right?
Yeah, yes, he was.
He's at BC. So he addressed
He's a starter on the BC football team.
Right. But then he said that Jackson and I'm blanking on the Carter. Carter was wearing the jersey, and he said
that's his other son, right?
Right. And he said, I don't even know where he found that. Like, it's been through three moves. I haven't seen that jersey since they handed it to me when I went to the Pro Bowl, so I have no idea where he found that. And the Jackson was the one wearing the costume that was actually the Freeze that they have in Atlanta. And
that's
said,
his son's friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have to set this up for people who don't know who the heck these people were.
Right.
So
and
I'm
he lives with
to,
them.
Yeah, connect all the dots.
Yeah, so I didn't know that. Like that was I learned that last night. But anyway, apparently he said that he was gonna race the Freeze, that Mike had like bet him to race the Freeze, and so Jen, Mike Vrabel's wife, got the costume, and then
because
of course,
he's a baseball player, right?
Yeah. And so that's
they go to Father Ryan. He was a Father Ryan baseball player who had graduated last year with his son that plays for BC. So he was hanging around and was trying to motivate the Father Ryan students to come out to the game. So he was going to be the Freeze and race fans during the between innings like the Freeze does, which is one of the best promotions going in Major League Baseball. If you've ever been to a Braves game with the Freeze, it's great. I thought it was Frozone from the Incredibles last night, but good clarification on the Vrabel household's part, but it makes sense. So he just decided to pull out that costume there. Out of boredom or out of excitement, I thought it was a great touch.
Yeah, and look, I thought that was cool. I mean, we all joke of, like, what's going on in the Vrabel household and stuff like that, but you saw other GMs and coaches with their families, and John Robinson addressed that too. He said the coolest part about all this for him was so his girls could see him work and see what he does, because these are things that they've never really gotten to see him do before, and so that was neat for him as a dad to allow his kids to be in there with him and watch him do what he does. And so I think that was the fun aspect of it. Jerry Jones, of course, sitting on a yacht. I didn't know that he was on the yacht until that story came out, that his war room was on his yacht, which is so Jerry. But
it's not like exactly Cliff Kingsbury was slumming it in his house.
No, he had an awesome house.
Jeez, was he? I thought he was at a Vegas casino.
He might have been. You never know.
My goodness.
He was living his best life. My favorite, though, is Bruce Arians, because that was just such a Bruce Arians look. Like, he's on his porch. He's got his one computer and his TV. I tweeted out last night joking that IT showed up with, like, four computers and said, Bruce, where you want them? And he said, put them over in the corner. I'll set them up. And he set one up and left the rest in boxes. I mean, that just that's Bruce Arians just chilling, living his best life. Andy Reid in his Hawaiian shirt, you know, I thought was great. So you got to see some personality last night. That was fun. That was entertaining.
Well, go back to you said Mike Vrabel seemed frustrated by what? Because he got popped with a bunch of questions?
Yeah, I think he was in – you kind of know how he is, especially after an event like this. Like, he's just – he's tired, and he's ready to answer the questions and just
right.
get it done. So you thought
your kids – your setup in your house was like that on national television – and you think all the questions are going to be just about Isaiah Wilson? Really?
I don't know if he actually, just so I have clarification,
Mike Vrabel thought he was going to have his son with a mullet, another guy in a suit that everybody was trying to figure out who, another son that people thought was taking a dump in the bathroom, which we've clarified that was not the case, and he had to clarify. And you thought all the questions were going to be about Isaiah Wilson and what's next in the second round? Really?
But I think, to his credit, he answered all the questions and he provided all of the detail, which, to a point, kind of spoiled the fun. The speculation of whether it was a bathroom or not was actually pretty funny.
Oh yeah.
Until it got quashed, and it was kind of a debate going on. But I think he's a little crazy, like the fox, like that. He kind of acts irritated, but I think deep down, he likes kind of showing his personality. You know, he's got the dip. In his mouth when they come to him.
Was that a dip,
you know,
or was that a baseball in his mouth? I don't know. That was quite the
– Chaw, I think, would be the term maybe. You know, Sparky plug, Lyle, Lenny Dykstra.
Plug is a better
plug
term.
Plug, yeah, there you go.
I have to give Joe Rexroad props, though, because he did
it. It's a great article.
He did an article on this, but he had the line, narrative flushed, wipe it from your mind. Well done, Joe. Well done.
Yeah.
But don't you think there's a little bit of crazy like a fox? You know, he acts irritated, but deep down he kind of likes it, and he likes that persona. I think the players really like his style. You heard Isaiah Wilson say that, you know, from the moment he met Mike Vrabel. He kind of likes that part of him. I think that's one of his biggest strengths as a coach, is he relates to the players well. I think the players love that stuff.
He's a smart bleep, and – that, you know, I like that about him too. I think it shows his personality. Sometimes it comes off as he's being a jerk, but you know, I think that's him.
I have no issues with the setup. I have no issues with, you know, I thought it was a keg party. I wasn't sure when I first saw it. I was kind of upset that we weren't invited. I know I would have wore a mask. I mean, I would have, but it looked like a keg party, or they were having a really, really good time. I tweeted out, I want some of that. Whatever they've got, I want some of that. But I don't have a problem with any of that. But, you know, it's like, if you're going to do that, that's fine. I'm totally fine with that. I'm just going – I didn't go to the Zoom call. And so I'm just going off what you're saying. But then you can't act like you're irritated by the questions. I mean, come on.
No,
you're a smart guy. Like, you have to know that's what's coming. Right? You're on national television. Portray, that's Twitter was going crazy. I know he's not on Twitter and he's not paying attention to that, but you know, Twitter's going absolutely bonkers. Well, no, I'm saying at the time. Yeah. It's not like he's sitting there checking, you know, his timeline and checking, oh wow, look, Twitter's going crazy over my house.
He's kind of worried about a draft.
I felt like he was
acting more frustrated with his kids, not with the questions.
Then say that. It's not what you said. You said he was frustrated.
Well, I apologize. I thought that I had said it that way, but I apologize. But yeah, he just seemed more frustrated with that he had to go answer those questions because of what his kids did. But I mean, it was funny. I mean, John Robinson was laughing, and of course the media got a kick out of it with him, and you know, he ended up taking it in strides, but you could tell he was just like, I got 18 and 19 year olds in this house, and they've been cooped up for 6 weeks. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Embrace all that. That's all I'm saying. Embrace it, man. I got no issues with him having personality. I mean, right? I mean, I'm totally fine with that. If you guys know anything about me, I'm all about show your personality, but let's also be okay with when people want to bombard you with questions when you're choosing to show personality or your house is showing personality. Like, who can't relate? Who has an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old, you know, or multiples in a house? Like, who couldn't relate to what he's saying? I would suspect 99% of people could relate to that, right?
Yeah. Look,
absolutely, absolutely.
Your kids, both of you, would be doing the same stuff. Maddox would be in the background doing. I mean, he jumped on the Facebook Live last night.
Honestly, he told me he told me he was going to jump, and I laughed. I thought he was joking because one, he shouldn't have even still been up. I was surprised he was still up, but nonetheless, he was up. He said he was going to put on. He likes to have fun with his Terry Crist mask that he's got, and so he was going to jump on with his Terry Crist mask on the Zoom call, and I was surprised that he didn't have it on. He did have his elf outfit on. I don't know if you guys could see that or not.
Yeah, I saw that he had something on.
Yeah, he had an elf outfit on, and I thought he was going to have the Terry Crist mask on just to really, jump in there on the Zoom call and get everybody's attention. But, look, I get all that. We can all relate to that. But, man, it was crazy just to see how – because your first reaction, right, was what in the bleep is going on there? Do they know they're on? That was my first reaction. Do they know the cameras are on them? What is happening?
How the two boys were like standing guard, behind the flag. They had the banner, the Titans banner, behind mm-hmm. Vrabel sitting at the computer, and the two guys were standing there like guards, one in the Freeze costume and one in the Pro Bowl jersey. It was hysterical. It was like,
funny.
We've been waiting for 3 hours. We got our big moment now.
Right.
The two guys, we're going
to
get
Tyler's
on TV.
Like, this hiding in the corner and trying to stay out of it, and he's the one that becomes the biggest story.
Right.
Was my count right?
That was great.
15 SEC players in the first round?
Yep,
did I count that right? 15? The old record was
record.
12. Not only did they set a new record, they blew by.
Then I think LSU with Edwards-Helaire going 32nd overall, LSU beat Alabama for players selected.
Well, four of the last five players selected in the first round were SEC players.
Yeah, some of us wanted one more, but can't win.
Well, this is the maybe even the more telling stat. The SEC has had more first round picks than any other conference for 9 of the last 10 drafts.
I'm surprised it's not 10 of 10, quite honestly.
Yeah.
9 of the last 10.
Who was the conference that beat them out? What year was that? I'd love to know.
I'd have to go back and look. I mean, I guess, would it be the Big Ten?
I don't know. I would honestly, my first guess would have been Pac-10 at the time, not Pac-12.
I know.
Pac-10.
I know over-unders. Overs hit for Ohio State players taken and Auburn players taken in the first round.
What about LSU players?
LSU did not hit. 5.5.
But, the other thing we hit on last night, guys, when we were doing our little Facebook Live Zoom call, how many players were taken? Jordan Love, I guess, is a non-Power 5, although Utah State, that's upper-level non-Power 5. But how many players from non-Power 5 schools, like the MAC or Conference USA, there was virtually none, right?
Well,
how many other than Love?
I'll use the same line that I used last night. Well, the Texans didn't have a pick. That's why.
Yep.
Right? Because that's all we did in Nashville last year.
John Robinson's not been afraid
to
take guys from leagues like that.
Who? Like the Texans select, and we're like, who in what school? That's what I felt like we did the entire draft last year in Nashville when it came to the Texans. All right, we'll come back. Richard Deitch from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on what he thought about the virtual draft. Trevor Maddich to kick off the second hour of the program. A lot more coming here on this Friday morning. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back on Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trevor Maddich and Teron Davenport in the second hour of the program. Remember, this is going to be your home for all the draft coverage the rest of the way. Rounds 2 and 3 will be tonight, and then they'll finish things up 4 through 7 on Saturday, like always. And everything will be heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9. And of course, all of our coverage is presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. So we talked a lot about the virtual draft, and Mike Vrabel's house. What about the pick of Isaiah Wilson and the SEC setting a new record, which I don't know how you're going to beat that record. 15. I mean, that's almost half of the first round went from one conference. I don't know if 15's ever going to get broken again. I guess never say never when it comes to the SEC. But as a whole, Isaiah Wilson, a tackle, a replacement for Jack Conklin. You okay with that move?
I thought it was a very intriguing pick, and I saw some parallels to last year when they took Jeffrey Simmons. In that, you know, this is a guy that they projected, I think, and you heard a lot of the experts talk about this. He only played 2 years at Georgia. He redshirted a year, played 2 years. And so he's a young draft-eligible guy. If he had gone back to school, I read a lot of the scouting reports on him. They projected him maybe to be able to get up into the top 10 next year. So I could see the thinking of John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. This guy might be a little raw. He's a little young. But he's a guy that maybe has a higher grade, a higher ceiling, and we can get him maybe a year early. And they're in a position at that spot to be able to use Dennis Kelly as long as they need to develop this guy. Everything I read about him is he's a physical specimen. He's a freak. He just needs a little bit of refining on some of the things. And he's an unbelievable road grader, run blocker. So there's a lot to like with the pick. It makes a lot of sense. And I think it falls into line with their philosophy. They also think he's got all of the things that you like personality-wise. You know, the bonds with Mike Vrabel, he seems to be a really good guy character-wise, and I think he'll fit right in. I think it's a brilliant pick at 29 to get a guy that has sort of top 10 potential. If he had come out next year, maybe we're talking about a guy that would have gone in the top 10.
Hmm. Yeah. No, and last night, you know, we were on the Facebook Live, the Zoom, and I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it, and I still feel that way. I think it's a solid pick, and I think having Dennis Kelly on this team, you know, makes it even better because you don't have to force him in there on day one. Now, do I think that there will be a competition in training camp? Absolutely. John Robinson said there will. I mean, John Robinson said there'll be a battle at right tackle between Dennis Kelly and Isaiah Wilson, but I think they have time to work on him and develop him and the things that he needs to clean up and get better at. They have time to do that, and he doesn't have that pressure that he has to go in and start day one. So I think that's huge.
Don't you think that's huge?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
When you're in a position to not have to feel like you got to put him in there in the first game and take your lumps. Think about the path of Rashawn Evans. It was because of injury as much as anything, but it took him a half a season. Took Jeffrey Simmons because of the injury, at least a half a season. We haven't even seen what he can do. You know, there are some guys that have taken that path when you can sort of Nate Davis, right? We thought he was completely off the radar, and by the end of the year, he was pretty good. So they've got a pretty decent track record of developing these guys. So it's not really a win now. Give me a guy that's going to help me day one. We're trying to win now, but I think it's a sound philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, look, and Ryan said this, and I said this too, that I think this is more you have to look at 2021 and not necessarily 2020. Now, I think he will be a factor and he'll play and, you know, he could take the starting job by the end of the season. But this is a pick more for the long-term future of the Titans and not necessarily right now. You have right now covered with Dennis Kelly, and I feel fine with that. Now, you want to find your next Dennis Kelly, your utility man, and it could be Quisenberry, and whenever Wilson takes over, then Dennis Kelly can go back to that role, but because I think that's just as important. But right now, I would say that, you know, they have found a solid pick that they can develop for the future.
Who's taller, Dennis Kelly or Isaiah Wilson?
I don't know.
Well, that was one of the things that Mike Vrabel was talking about when he was discussing Isaiah Wilson, was just how big the guy is. When Mike Vrabel's a big guy. He said when he met him face-to-face, he just thought, wow, look at the size of this guy. He said, I had to really take a big U-turn detour to just get around him to my desk. But one of the things they talked about is 6'7", 350?
Yeah, but I think one of the things they talked about is that he's, you know, he's not just a big blob. You know, he's not just like some big – he's a – He's a guy that has mobility.
He played lacrosse in high school.
Yeah, he's a guy that's, you know, he's got mobility, a guy that can move around for a frame like that. It's not like he, you know, a lot of guys are just massive and they can't do much, right? You just blow right by them, and no matter how big they are. And they're obviously painting just the opposite picture. Like, this guy is mobile. This guy can do things. It's impressive to do that with that type of frame. In fact, I think that was said a lot about. I mean, if you look at some of these, look at the tackles that went and how many tackles went in the first round, and look at the size of them. Right? Look at the size of some of these.
Massive.
They are massive dudes.
I mean, the guy from Louisville.
Right. I mean, I felt like all of them were like 6'6", 6'7", you know, that type, with 350, 360, 340, somewhere between 340 and 360, and between 6'6", and 6'7". And it's like, holy cow. But what did they all say? You know, they played basketball, they played lacrosse, they played all these other sports, and they were real good. Look, if you're just a blob, I don't care how big you are, you're not playing basketball, right? Was that the kid? I don't remember which kid it was that was also a real standout basketball guy. And you saw him on the court, and it was like, holy cow. Like, I don't even know. How do you guard that, you know, at the high school level? But he was a guy that you have to run up and down the court. And I think that was the point of it, right? Like, this guy is not just a big blob that's just going to stand there and hope that you can't get around him and try to, you know, make sure you can't get around him because he can't move. These guys can move, and I think that's one of the things they liked about Isaiah Wilson. I think we've got Richard Deitch on the line from The Athletic. Richard, good morning. What did you think of the virtual draft?
Good to be with you guys. I thought, given all the technological challenges that they had, I thought it was really well done. They, pretty much glitch-free. I mean, very minor glitches at the most. They were able to, you were able to visually see everything you wanted to see, given, you know, everybody was in their homes and had their own video kits. The studio talent wasn't in the same place, which is obviously, you guys know, just a real challenge always, just to sort of figure out how to do that where it sort of flows and, you know, there's not dead air. So I think all in all, I thought they did a pretty good job given what they had to deal with, and they didn't have any drama or anything. So it really was very much to me a straight kind of X's and O's draft. You know, no quarterback falling, you know, down the draft the way like Manziel, Brady Quinn, and some others have. So kind of a meat and potatoes draft. But I thought, I got to tip my hat to the people behind the scenes at ESPN, the NFL Network. I thought they did a pretty amazing job.
What did you think about, of course, they were showing it on ABC, they were showing it on ESPN. What did you think of the two different broadcasts?
Well, I think that really is about if you're a massive college football fan or if you're a massive NFL fan. And I know that those groups are, you can be part of both groups. But the ABC broadcast is very, very college-specific. It's the backstories of the players. It's really heavily focused on sort of who they are and who they were in college, where the traditional broadcast, the ESPN NFL Network broadcast, is really all about how does this player fit into this team? You know, why did this team, what does this team need? Why did this team make that selection? How will this player, you know, sort of be part of whatever this team's philosophy is trying to be? So much of it is just, I think it's just your own interest in terms of, you know, what you want. As far as the personalities, I mean, honestly, I don't know how many people are going to, like, watch one or the other. It's like, you know, outside, like, Kirk Herbstreit's immediate family, like, are you really going to watch ABC because you love Kirk Herbstreit? I don't know. You know, I always think that that's more about what kind of draft you want and, you know, if you have cable or not, too. That's obviously a real factor. If you know, if you're a cord cutter or if you don't have cable, you know, you watch the ABC broadcast, because you didn't have access to the ESPN broadcast. But, again, I thought having flipped between the two, I thought both were well done. I certainly learned more about the college players on the ABC one, and I think I learned more about, you know, the team's individual needs on the main one, the ESPN NFL Network one.
Talking to Richard Deitch from The Athletic. And, Richard, I really enjoyed your article, you know, leading into it on all of the logistics. that they did. And I think in the context of that, I appreciate what you're saying, that they have to be pretty thrilled after day one. Of course, they've got two more days. Maneuver was pretty remarkable. We can relate here. We're doing the show from three different houses here, plus a producer back at the studio, and so it definitely changes things. But have you gotten any feedback this morning from any of the people you talked to? Are they pleased?
Yeah, I talked to one or two people who were part of the production. I mean, they're thrilled. They're thrilled because the tech worked. That's really was their biggest fear and concern, and things with Goodell went off really, really clean. They were able to get visuals inside the draft homes. You know, they weren't always able to interview the players immediately because, sometimes the players, the families were celebrating and just, you know, they weren't in an area where they could sort of do one-on-ones with ESPN and the NFL Network. I think they probably would have liked to have had a little bit more of those. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, they were massively thrilled. I mean, you know, there were real concerns, like, you know, what happens if, like, we don't have enough bandwidth on Joe Burrow's, like, line or something like that and lose him? I mean, there were real technological worries. So they're thrilled, and it seems, and again, this is from John Oran's reporting of the Sports Business Daily. He got some early overnight ratings from major cities, and they're up like crazy, up double digits, big-time double digits. So the indication would be that the viewership number is going to be pretty much a monster.
Yeah, I certainly watch more than I normally do because there's usually a lot of other games on that night. But, Richard, one thing that Darren actually observed, and we were talking about this last night when we were doing some coverage, it seemed like there was not a lot of second-guessing of picks. Maybe it's a little bit because it's harder to have a debate, a discussion when you're in different houses and you don't want to talk over each other too much. There's a delay. But did you sense that? Maybe it's just because of the time that we're in. You didn't want to have a lot of negativity there, but did you sense that?
Yeah, I did, and I think you probably hit on both. One, I think for sure that because you're not next to the person, it's much harder to get into a back and forth, and these guys know that they're dealing with technology, and so they don't want to jump on each other. You know, you don't want two people talking at the same time, which, you know, if you're in a bit of a debate, that could easily happen. And then, yeah, I mean, I think probably subconsciously in the back of people's minds, you don't want to be too negative. You don't want to sort of go over the top on a day like this. But I think more of it, honestly, is just that nobody was in the room next to each other to do that. The other thing, too, is, again, usually if you think about it, there's usually players who are, like, you know, really controversial type players, which is where these discussions happen. I'm not really sure if that existed in this draft. You know, there are one or two picks where it seemed like the teams went way above the conventional board, you know, to go high, like the Raiders, I know, picked late. They sort of took somebody who wasn't necessarily on everybody's first-round board. But, you know, at the same time, too, like, you know, it's not like Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, you know, are smarter than Mike Mayock. You know, we're all guessing here anyway. But I think you're onto something. I think it was both those things as to why the debates didn't happen. Interestingly enough, though, for television purposes, of course, you know, people going back and forth at each other is usually the most memorable part of the NFL draft. Or you have the converse when you have John Gruden basically, you know, telling every team that they should draft Johnny Manziel.
Right. Richard, I did want to mix one in on the Jordan Last Dance thing. You again set the table for me as I got ready to watch. And, of course, you know, they almost couldn't go wrong, but I think you hit on it. It's just a really well-done production on top, even for people that are like, yeah, I watched it, I lived it. You still learned a lot of things. I really enjoyed it. So give us a little preview of what's coming up on Sunday for parts 3 and 4.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I saw it so long ago now. It feels like I know part 5 is still.
Well, it's the Bad Boys. It looks like it's the Bad Boys,
yeah,
part.
Oh,
but,
okay.
But here's one thing. How about this, Richard? Just from your article here, because I think this was interesting how you kind of laid this out. How they did it with Jordan, right? How Jordan bought in to letting this be done and sort of taking ownership of it. So they actually got him three different times, right, to sit down and do these really long interviews that they're using for the 10 parts.
They did. First of all, I appreciate you sort of jogging my memory. So, yeah, 3 and 4 is a lot of the journey of the Bulls to get past the Pistons and the hatred pure hatred between like Jordan and Isaiah Thomas, et cetera, which filtered onto the Dream Team. Of course, Isaiah didn't make the Dream Team, not because he wasn't good enough, because I think there are people who just didn't want to play with him. In terms of Jordan's access, yeah, the filmmakers got Jordan on three different occasions, probably 7 or 8 hours in total in terms of interview time. But keep in mind, this is an important one. You know, Jordan's people are co-producers on this film. So while it is excellent and while it's introspective, always remember that it's also Michael Jordan wanting to put, a certain perspective into the marketplace. This is his chance to sort of, I think, probably define his legacy for a new generation. So while it's an excellent doc and it's certainly not a puff piece, at the same time, I would never say it's like a complete examination of all things Michael Jordan, because the doc doesn't get into his first marriage. It goes certainly into the gambling, but they're just areas that the doc does not go. But it is well worth your time. It's really well done.
Richard Deitch from The Athletic is with us. How much went into having to, because originally it was going to come out in June, obviously with everything going on with COVID-19, ESPN elected to go ahead and move it up. How did they have to finish anything? How much went into that decision?
Yeah, I mean, they moved it up because obviously we're in the middle of the pandemic and they knew that the people would want the programming. I think they knew, too, that if they can get it done a little faster, it's very good publicity for ESPN. They talked to the filmmakers. And what they did is they worked backwards. They Jason Hayher is the filmmaker, and they basically said, when can you finish episode 10? When do you need to finish episode 10? He gave them a date, and then they worked backwards from that. So they worked backwards to get to when episode 1 could debut. Last I checked with Jason, he was really close to finishing the final cut of episode 10, and then after the final cut gets looked at by the people it has to be looked at, you put you sort of just gloss it up a little bit, the right captions, you make sure it's sort of cut perfectly. So he's just about done with the whole project, and I think episode 10 will go sometime in May. So that's sort of the time frame. They just really tried to figure out, okay, when does the director need enough time to finish the last episode, and then let's go back, work backwards, and then this is how we can figure out what we can debut.
Let's end with this. If you could put together your documentary or 30 for 30, what would be your subject matter?
It would be your show, guys.
Yeah,
let
right.
me think about this. good ratings.
That would be a 30 for 30 short.
Yeah, I like that.
Be a 15 for 15. You've stumped me here. That's a good one. Because I think so many of the most fascinating people in sports have been done. I don't have a great answer because
okay.
I think so many of the people, from Jordan to Iverson to Kobe, to Ali, we've sort of seen him. I'm someone who really likes the exploration of sort of sports figures that really transcend sports and tell us about ourselves. So had it not been done, I probably would have picked O.J. Simpson. So that's usually where my interest would lie, is sort of can you find a sports figure that it's not just a sports doc, but it sort of tells you something about America too? So if you can figure out who that person is, that's the one I'd be interested in.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Hey, thanks for your time. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You got it. Stay safe to everybody there, too. Thank you.
All right. That is Richard Deitch from The Athletic. That's where you can find his work, and he does a great job, as always. We will come back and start the second hour with Trevor Matich. We'll get his views of the first round and what's next from him on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.